back to the Uncommon Cast, everyone.
Hey, if you are new here, we'll give a quick introduction to the us. I'm Ryan.
I'm Pam.
I'm Dawn.
And I'm Cody.
And we are so excited to be at the table again. And today we have a very special guest that we are excited to introduce to you. His name is Carlos Whitaker. He is an author, a speaker, a purveyor of hope. And we are so excited that he is here with us. And Carlos, just to give you a little bit about who we are at Uncommon Good, we are basically a band of vagabonds traveling the world, trying to reclaim some truth about life, faith, and being human. We want to create a space for everybody at the table to engage in what we see as this life-giving hope that is available, but sometimes feels inaccessible. So we are working hard to try to make it feel more accessible for people. And we see you doing exactly that. And that's why we wanted to have you here with us this morning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, guys, for having me. I'm honored to find some other people looking for hope in humanity. So it's what I do. It's what I try to do every single day. And this should be fun. So thanks for having me.
Giddy up. You actually sparked us. We were in the audience at Catalyst West, I don't know, what, four years ago?
Yeah, it was 4 years ago.
And we got to hear you speak at that. And obviously, you just sparked our hearts. So it's a joy for us to connect with you now, man.
Oh, so cool. So cool. Well, thanks for letting me hang out in San Diego for a few minutes where you guys are at.
You're welcome to come to our spaceship looking studio anytime.
I'm in, dude. I'm in. I mean, for those that aren't watching on YouTube or whatever, I mean, these guys have this thing set up. Like the camera angle I'm looking at looks like you guys are about to take off. It's awesome.
We are. Just wait.
Well, hey, we thought with everything that's been going on in your life that this podcast wasn't going to happen, or we were definitely going to have to put it off. And obviously we would have been fine with that. But we just got through Easter weekend, where so many people celebrate resurrection, a coming back to life. And so many people in the Christian, you know, umbrella celebrate Good Friday, which is a death of things, a death of Jesus. You and your family, brother, we've been following, you have had a gnarly couple weeks where you have experienced your own Good Friday, your own death of things, your own death of loved ones, your own turmoil and tragedy in life. And yet also coming to just a couple days ago, it has been unreal to follow the resurrection in a sense, that you and your family have been able to see about a community that supported you. So I wondered, just in a brief recap, can you tell us about your death and resurrection that you've just been through over the past few weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. We're a family of, just so there's some context for some of your listeners, a family of five that live in Nashville, Tennessee. And I live pretty openly on Instagram. Like people have followed me for the last 15 years online in some way, shape or form, whether it be, I had a blog for those of you that don't even remember what those things are. That was like before people had video cameras and like, we would just write things. Right. And so, I've had a YouTube channel for like a decade. People kind of followed my family. And then on Instagram, I've lived pretty in front and out loud of people. In front of people for a while now. And so, we kind of show the good and the bad and the in between. And I have no shame showing the bad. And so about, I don't even know where we're at now. I don't know what's up, down, left, or right. But it was about 2 weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago. I'll back up to even Thursday of that week. My daughter, nobody really knows this yet. My daughter was in a car accident. And so that kind of woke us up like at 7 a.m. She's like, She's on her way to work. She has a car accident. So have to deal with that all day long. That kind of shook us a little bit as a family, because it could have been a lot worse. And then that was Thursday. And then Friday, I had like this super deep emotional kind of reconciliation conversation with one of my best friends on planet Earth, to where it's just exhausting. One of those exhausting, emotionally exhausting conversations where you're putting everything on the line. Yeah. But it ends up like working out and things are good. And so like, I would say like after those 2 days, like I'm already like, man, like this is, I'm going to remember this week. Like this week was intense. Like in 2021, this was an intense week. And little did I know my week hadn't even started. Right.
We're just ramping up at this point.
Yeah. And then so Saturday, we get about 11 inches of rain in Nashville in 24 hours. And for people that aren't used to rain or understand what that is like, that's the most rain that we've ever had in the history of recorded rainfall in Nashville. And so Nashville floods, houses flood. Mine's one of the houses that floods. And so, you know, our house floods. We're taking everything to the second story, trying to save as much as we can, but we're losing a lot in the basement as water's kind of rushing in. And, you know, we're up till 4 a.m. just trying to get everything safe and up and get all the memories and the VHS tapes off the floor and moving sofas. And it was just exhausting. And then, so then I that was Saturday night. Sunday morning or Sunday, I drive to Atlanta and I have some work in Atlanta to do. Heather calls me and says, "Hey, Pope, our dog, he's not looking too hot. He got into the compost," which he does every once in a while. And we're like, okay, you know, like he normally gets in the compost. He feels like crap for a couple of days and then he bounces back. So Monday I get back, and he's not doing good. So Monday night we take him to the ER, like around 7, and to the vet ER, and the doctors, you know, they do x-rays, they do all the things, and they're like, looks like he's just got a bad case of gastritis, you know. So that was like honestly a pretty penny chunk out of our wallet to just find out that he would have been fine had we not taken him. So that's, you know, so now I'm just telling you, I'm just exhausted at this point. Like I'm just like, Lord have mercy, like what is happening? We kind of felt like, oh. So the next morning, I'm actually in the middle of recording a podcast with somebody else. They're interviewing me and my wife comes running in and she is in tears and we've got chickens. Okay. And her favorite chicken that she had been, it's our newest chicken that we got as a little chick a couple months ago. She'd been slowly introducing it to the family of chickens. Well, somehow it got out of the coop and an owl, a great horned freaking owl had bombed the chicken, killed the chicken. Oh, but we had some yarn set up like over the chicken coop to where the chickens can't fly out. Well, little did we know that it actually this owl got tangled up in all the yarn. So Heather goes out there and sees her dead chicken, but then sees the owl that killed it, but the owl is trapped. And so we have to spend the next 2 hours freeing the murderer owl from the yarn right next to the dead chicken. So, you know, at this point, it's like, oh my gosh, what else could go wrong?
It was at this point that my friend Megan actually texted and is like, are you watching what's happening with Carlos on Instagram? Oh, because man. We're all friends. You didn't know. But she's like, check in with Carlos. Stuff is going down.
Yeah. So stuff's going down. We rescue the owl. It's actually pretty badass. My wife's like holding the owl. Yeah, she's like, crazy. She's got no gloves on. And this owl is just letting my wife hold her. It's the craziest thing. You know, every like animal expert that follows me on Instagram, which surprisingly I have many. I'm
working at zoos and those things, are your people,
you know, and they're like, I can't believe that that owl did not put 4 inches of gashes in her arms, like just the claws on those things. But no, just let her kind of do it. And we take it to a rescue. Everyone is DMing, you know, one of your guests, Sharon McMahon, and they're like telling her, oh my gosh, you got to go rescue Carlos's owl because, you know, they think because she likes wildlife, she must be a professional. And she's
clearly.
Clearly. So, you know, we kind of had fun with that. I did a live with her and then whatever. So we get home from taking the owl to a wildlife rescue place and Pope, our dog, is just not doing well. Like he's kind of getting worse. And so Heather's like, you know, I'm going to take him back to the vet. You stay here because we can take him back and not have to pay anything extra if we take him within 24 hours. So she took him back and kind of dropped him off. And the doctor's like, well, let's take another look at him. So we have some friends bringing us over dinner. Like, I mean, we're already at the place where people are bringing us dinner, right? Like we've already had that kind of week where we're like in a food train already, right? Like people are already bringing us dinner. They're already, we're already emotionally taxed. And so we have some friends over, they brought us over some food, having dinner. And then the vet calls and I answer the phone and it's the doctor. And she's like, well, so I'm just going to be frank with you. And when she said that, you know, like all of our guts just drop. And, you know, long story short, Pope, with his liver was failing. And there was a, there were, she's like, there's things that still can be done. But at this point, she started adding up what could be done. And we're talking, honestly, we're talking $15,000. Like we're talking like, and I mean, I love that dog, but it's just not, it's just not feasible, you know? And I was the only one ready to mortgage the house to save the dog, right? Everybody else was like, listen, like he's seven. Bernese Mountain Dogs only live to about eight or nine. You know, we've had a good life. We, it was just, it was hard. It was one of the most gut-wrenching decisions ever. Yeah. And so we make the horrible decision and drive to the vet and we say goodbye. And so, you know, the family leaves, I'm in the room as we say goodbye to him. And I'm kind of the last one there with him. And it's just gutting. Now, all this to say, we have to leave the next morning to go to fly to Denver because I'm preaching at a church on Sunday. And so we decided, you know, weeks ago that, hey, we're going to go to Breckenridge for just a couple days of relaxation. Little did we know how bad we needed it. We didn't know it was going to come at such a, so it's midnight. Everyone gets home. We're packing. We have to leave at like 3:30 AM because we're on the 5 AM flight. So we don't get any sleep. We're exhausted.
Oh my God.
We pack. We're crying the whole way to the airport. We're crying, walking through TSA. Everyone's just mourning Pope. And we get on the plane. We fly to Atlanta. We have to run in Atlanta to catch our next flight to Denver. As we're going down one of the escalators in Terminal A, Heather's at the bottom of the escalator. At the top, I'm at the top, and there's a guy right in front of me that drops his away suitcase, like his luggage. And I see him like trying to grab it. Somehow it slips out of his hand. This is not a joke, right? Nobody, you couldn't write a script. No movie production company would take this script because it's not real. And this, it, I mean, imagine you getting on a plastic sled on ice is basically what happened. And this suitcase goes flying down the escalator, takes my wife out, who's at the bottom. So it probably went 30 feet before it hit her, takes her out. She lands on her wrist and breaks her wrist. And we have to, you know, we get in the ambulance and we miss our flight. And we have some friends in Atlanta that picked up our kids. And I'm in an ambulance driving to Grady Hospital where we're trying to figure out what's going on with my wife's wrist. And so there was our Good Friday. Okay. Right. So there was our, you know, it was, I was, once they admitted Heather in, I called my pastor, Alex Seeley, and I called her and I'm just bawling and I'm just asking her. I'm like, Alex, like, are we cursed? Because I asked her, like, listen, I didn't go to seminary. I don't have a theology degree. I don't know how this stuff works. I love Jesus. I love our church. I love her. I love Henry, our pastor. I just need somebody to tell me, like, after this week, are we cursed?
Yeah.
And you know, did I do something? Did I, you know, I lost all kind of semblance of up, down, left or right in my faith at this moment. I didn't know what was happening. And she just said, Carlos, you're not cursed. You know, sometimes life has a way of honestly, like just having really shitty weeks, like, and you've just happened to have one, like, and it just, and as impossible as this week feels, everybody's going to have a week like this at one point in their life. And that doesn't mean that they're cursed. And she prays for us and she's, you know, she's like, I'm going to call your kids. I'm going to pray for them because I know they're traumatized. I'm going to pray for you. She actually prays some really strong scripture over our lives. She prays that what the locust has devoured, God would bring back a hundredfold. Like she's praying pretty powerfully. And so I'm feeling a little bit better when I get off the phone with her. Oh man. And then so Heather finally gets back to me. She's like, they think that it's fractured in a way that I'm not going to need surgery, which was like huge.
Yeah.
So she said, they're going to put it in a splint and let me go. I said, okay, well, let's get back to Nashville so that we can go to a hand doctor. And she's like, no, we're going to Denver. Like we are flying tonight to Colorado. If you know anything about my wife, that's just kind of how she rolls. So I booked us a flight for 8 hours later. And as I'm booking the flight, Sharon McMahon.
Okay, wait, let me pause you for a second.
Okay, we'll stop.
Let me ask you this, because now we're going to turn the corner. And you are a big fan of Hope.
Yeah.
And in those moments, before, while you're in Atlanta, how are you feeling about hope at that point?
In those moments, I'm feeling like hope is a figment of my imagination.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a podcast called Human Hope, and I thought I was going to have to, you know, hang up the podcast, like stop it. Like there is no hope left.
Yeah.
There is like zero hope left in humanity. There's zero hope left for my family. Mm-hmm. Again, there's no way all these things would happen to just one family. I was like, this is it. Like, what else? Like, if we get on a flight tonight, it's going to crash. Like that's like the next thing. Right.
Yeah.
Like, so I'll be honest with you. That's why I called my pastor, because I had none left.
Yeah.
I didn't have any left.
And then as somebody that is publicly fanatical about hope, like I know for me, like as a professional Christian from time to time, did that, what did that do to your self-identity? Suddenly like finding yourself not sure what this hope was all about.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. So it didn't do a lot. It didn't shake my identity. Only because we have been through crap as a family. Like we've actually been through a lot harder seasons than last week. Say for instance, 2019, when my daughter Sohaila gets diagnosed with histoplasmosis, is in the hospital for 21 days, and they didn't know if it was cancer. They didn't know what it was. So we had 21 days of doctors not knowing what was wrong with my daughter, and her being in the most intense pain you've ever seen in a human. I've literally ever seen a human being in. And so I've got some capacity. I knew I had the capacity for deeper, harder hurt. And I've felt myself in a deeper place of feeling hopeless and knowing that, and I feel like hindsight is always so beneficial when you look at, this is why it's so important to journal. I'm always telling people to journal and things like that, because I can look back to even more hopeless seasons when I lost my family, because of decisions I made, and I lost everything. Right. And so, that was a decade ago. So I can look back and see some pretty dismal, hopeless situations. So even as I was feeling hopeless, I know that the truth, I don't want to be preachy here, but this is just true for me, that the truth of the gospel doesn't depend on how I feel. And so like I had that, even though I felt hopeless, I knew that I wasn't. So even though my feelings told me I was hopeless, I knew that the truth was that I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so just knowing that, like having that as like fact in my brain, carried my soul, right? In these moments. And so so it didn't really mess up my identity. You know, as a Christian, it didn't mess up my identity in Christ, my identity in being a hope dealer. But I did feel like there was no hope. I felt like we were about to get nailed again. I felt like the plane was going to crash, or we were going to go skiing. I was going to break my neck. Like it was that, man. It was the sky is falling, Chicken Little running around. So I guess that kind of answers your question. Like, I felt hopeless, but I knew in my brain, even though my heart didn't feel it, I knew in my brain that I wasn't. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So Carlos, at this point, you're feeling like so many of us feel in our lives, or will feel in our lives, that the world is against me, fate is against me, everything is crashing. I don't know how I'm going to get out from under this. And this is that weight of life and tragedy and despair that, coming out a year of pandemic, I think a lot of people will relate to on some level, right? But then light surprised you, right? Then life came out of death in a resurrection Christian-y phrase there, right? But it's a true thing. So what happened there?
Yeah. So they're discharging Heather, and a couple people had been asking me, for my Venmo in my DMs. Right. So a couple of you were like, hey, and I'm like, man, I ain't giving you my Venmo. I'm a grown ass man. I can pay my bills. I can hustle. I can make do. Like, I don't need people giving me their money right now. obviously I've got issues to work on myself, you know, more that I can talk with my therapist on, but you know, I was like, I don't need your money. I don't need a handout. That's not what I do. I give is what I do. I don't receive. I give. And a couple of people have found my Venmo by this point. And like, you know, it's actually not complicated. You can really do that if you're in desperate need of finding somebody's Venmo. And so, you know, I'd gotten like, hey, here's $50 for a couple of bottles of wine for you and your wife. Here's go buy LaSalle an ice cream cone. Go, you know, it was cool. Like I had like, you know, a couple $100 in there. And I was like, man, this is so kind. And I said something about it on my Insta stories, like, you know, I'm not going to give you guys my Venmo. You know, I can't do that. I'm just not gonna do it. Well, then Sharon texts me, McMahon, and she's like, what's your Venmo? And I was like, I'm not giving you my Venmo. And she's like, what's your Venmo? I was like, you are not going to tell people my Venmo. Listen, friend, you will not do this. And she's just like, you can be proud and not give it to me and I will find it, or you can give it to me. And that was the beginning of something that I still honestly, we're a week later now. No, we're not. We're not even a week later. We're like 5 days later. Mm-hmm. And I still don't understand and grasp what happened. So she kind of shares my story with her platform, and her crew, they've already raised, you know, almost $1 million, mm-hmm, for all kinds of different organizations and health, you know, health issues for things. And I pick up Heather, and I pick her up from the ER. She walks out. And at this point, my phone, I actually hadn't seen her post yet. And if you have Venmo on your phone, when you get a Venmo, the push notification sounds like a slot machine at a casino. Like it goes ching. Right. And so, so I turned my phone from silent to on, and like all of a sudden I just start hearing cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. I'm not kidding you. Every second. Okay. Every single second I was hearing that sound for at least 5 straight hours. Cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. And I looked down, I was like, $1. $5, $100, $2, $7, $1, $20, $50. And I'm watching it. I'm watching it. 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000. And I'm watching over the course of hours.
Yeah.
All of our basement bills get paid for, everything. And then here's the thing. She shares it again. Mm-hmm. And it keeps going. And then it becomes like a game to Sharon. And then it's like,
what can
like,
we do?
Because I text her, I was like, you know, and now I'm like bawling. And I text her a video message and I'm like, literally half of Sohaila's medical bills from Vanderbilt in 2019 are paid for. So she does the math and she's like, oh, half? Okay. And then she goes back, to her crew. Well, we take off from Atlanta. We fly to Denver. I don't know, because I don't have Wi-Fi on the flight. I would have known had it been working, but she continues to like, hey, by the time Carlos's plane lands, I would love to see all of the medical bills covered.
Yeah. Sure and enough, we know because we were watching it happen.
Right.
It was like one more hour, 30 more minutes, guys. Yeah. You're like,
she lands in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I land and my phone starts going off again. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And I look. And again, I'm not going to disclose numbers because, you know, my family's decided to not do that. But I can tell you that not only were Sohaila's medical bills, now, and again, people can do the math themselves. We were uninsured and in the hospital for 21 days. Okay. Wow. So do the math. Oh, not only were her, hospital bills taken care of and our basement taken care of and Heather's new medical bills taken care of and Pope's vet visits taken care of, but our car payments were taken care of. Our student debt was taken care of. We'd taken out a loan to build a basement in our, build an apartment in our basement under our house. That was taken care of. Like every single ounce of debt that my family had, all the credit card had was completely taken care of. Wow. And I walked to the bathroom and I'm just weeping as I am trying to say thank you to these strangers that did this. Now, I was okay. So right? Everything's taken care of. Our lives are changed now. And when I say changed, it's not like we got $1 million when we won the lottery, but it's more like our debt was taken care of. And you guys know when you have no debt, your monthly income increases because you don't have to pay those bills anymore, right? So like that's how different our life is now. And but I'm having some struggle with like worthiness, with accepting this. Like I'm like, wait a second, like this is supposed to happen to like people on welfare that are in apartments that need, that want to get their first home, not like 40-year-old guys and their families with like, I'm fine, you know. But what I had to get to was breaking those lies that I wasn't worthy of this as well. And I think once I wrote a whole book on breaking agreements with lies. And so once I applied my own thinking to my
which
own
is the
story,
hardest thing to do, by the way.
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh geez, I got to do this myself. Once I did that myself, I was actually giving the gift back to everybody that had given to me when I was so grateful and appreciative. And you know, it's so funny because like even now, like every day, it's been a couple of days now, like once or twice a day, I'll just hear a little cha-ching and someone's like, oh, I'm late to the party, you know, and someone like give like $5 or something like that. And it's, I'm so blown away at the goodness of humanity that, you know, and here's the thing, did that take away the pain? No. Did that take away the pain and the trauma of the loss that we endured? We are still crying. We still hurt. Mm-hmm. Heather is still in pain. We still wonder why were we chosen to have all of this happen to us? Like all those questions are actually still there, but they're not mutually exclusive from feeling hopeful, right? So you can still have doubt, have questions, have concern, be wounded, be traumatized, while at the same time experiencing the goodness of not only humanity, but what I believe is the goodness of God.
Yeah.
And, and they can both coexist. God is not a feeble God that can't handle our doubts and our questions and our concerns. Like he can handle it all. He's not scared of you asking hard questions. What he does when I ask hard questions, obviously, as he comes on the other side and doesn't answer me, he just blesses me, right? Mm-hmm. And so like that's just kind of like what it looks like. And so, you know, here I sit, you know, and still overwhelmed, still traumatized, still broken, but really hopeful and grateful.
Awesome. Man, you're gonna make me run around the room. You're preaching.
Seriously.
Oh, that's so good.
As we were watching that kind of unfold, and even some things that you said in the days following, one of the things I was struck by was the number of people that gave a dollar or $5. And one of the things that we've been kicking around at this table is the idea that we're actually, all of us in our own brokenness or in our own, out of our own lacking, we are actually the raw materials of the miracles that God is wanting to do or is doing. And it makes me think of the story in the Bible of the boy with his loaves and his fishes, and he didn't have much, but he brought what he had, and God, Jesus did this amazing thing with it. And yet we often think like my dollar doesn't matter. The little that I have to offer, the little I can bring to the table isn't going to make a difference. So I'm going to do nothing. And yet we get to watch as these people just came to the table with whatever it was that they had that and participated in an actual miracle.
I mean, it was, I mean, I'm not a, you know, statistician or anything. Like I don't have the data, but it, from just going through my Venmo, I would say 97.99% of the gifts were $20 or less. That was what it was. It was $20, $5, $1, $3. And it was a tidal wave of that canceled our debt, like completely canceled our debt. And so, you know, when people think, it's not going to matter. I am like your beta test, right? I am the lab rat where you can forever say, nope, we saw it happen in the lab rat. Like it actually happened. The $1, $5 things actually changed somebody's life.
That's incredible. Right. And you guys touched on something yesterday in your live with Sharon about like kind of changing that mindset too about receiving and not feeling like, you know, you want to be the giver, not the receiver. But I loved how that turned around and like being a gracious receiver is a gift, right?
Oh, so
that,
gosh.
What that did for all of those people that gave was mm-hmm. amazing, you know, in and of itself. Yeah. And like, that's it creates this lovely community of people that are just participating in your, you know, hope coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yes. You know, and you know, the thing is for me, what I had to get, and it took a bunch of friends telling me this, but for me, they keep saying, you know, Carlos, like you've been giving of yourself for 15 mm-hmm. years mm-hmm. to this audience, to the core of like your Instagram audience, your mm-hmm. Twitter audience, your YouTube audience, your whatever, your readers of your books. Like you've been giving them nonstop every single day. And this was the first time they've ever had an opportunity to give you back something mm-hmm. without the expectation of them getting something. So anytime that I've asked for anything from my, it's always been like either a book or a course or like something, I'm going to provide you a product, a value, an exchange for whatever money it is. And so like they don't ever feel like they're giving because that's not giving, that's buying.
Yeah.
And this, at this point, when I allowed them to do that, it was the first time. And that's why I honestly believe that's where half the groundswell was. It wasn't, you know, and the thing is it wasn't just Sharon's people. There's 160,000 of my crew that were grateful to be able to give me. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm reading in the Venmo. It's like, you have taught me so much on racial reconciliation over the last year. You've poured your blood, sweat, and tears on helping me be, you know, anti-racist, all these things. You've never asked for anything. This is my way of saying mm-hmm. thank you. And you're right. Like to be a happy receiver is going to be a gift to the giver. And, I just feel like we all could probably do a better job at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So good.
It really shows like the power of community, and we're freaks about community and, and what it can do for people. And you've created a community on your Instagram that, you know, showed up in this time, but can you tell us a little bit about some of those things that you just mentioned right now? Like let's back up a little bit into like the summertime mm-hmm. and this year of pandemic and the craziness that's been happening and how
politics and racism and the clash, all that.
And how you've used your platform to bring that hope to people. Because it has been helpful for me, I can say personally, and I think everybody at this table would say the same thing.
Yeah, you know, I'd kind of definitely took a big transition and turn this year as far as what I talk about on my platform. And I'd always kind of been like the faith-based, like positive dude, right? Mm-hmm. Like you invite me to your church, I'm going to tell you a bunch of stories that are going to make you feel good. I'm going to talk about, you know, Jesus. I'm going to make you a better Christian. And which is fine. I've loved that part of who I was. I love that calling. But I've watched that calling completely shift this year. I've mm-hmm. watched it leave, and you know, and a lot of evangelical Christians have left because I'm not the Bible verse everyday guy anymore on my Instagram, which mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with that. There's people that are really good at that. I have just been called to talk about, I feel like and I accidentally stumbled upon it, but when Ahmaud Arbery was killed, I put up a video, how my white brothers and sisters can help their black friends right now is what it was called. And so when I put that up in, it may have been March or April of last year, mm-hmm. I had 36,000 Instagram followers when I put that video up, and overnight I had 28,000 Instagram followers. Mm-hmm. I lost about 8,000 Instagram followers the second I put that up. And that was a deciding point moment for me. I felt called to make that video. I offended a lot of people with that video, but I know I helped a lot of people with that video. Mm-hmm. And I said, God just told me to this is what you're doing. Keep going. So then I just kind of kept leaning into this space and watching more people kind of show up to these conversations and honestly watching some people that left that were offended, come back and apologize to me for leaving. Not that I even knew that they left, but apologize and then start learning. And then, you know, I was like, well, I wonder if I can, I mean, I feel pretty capable to have hard conversations, not just about race, but about anything. Let's talk mm-hmm. about COVID. Let's talk about Trump. Let's talk about Biden. Let's talk about, you know, whatever it may be. So I start having more and more conversations, not negating my point of view. See, I would say that some like news outlets or people that are trying to be like fair, fact-based news sources, Smart Her News, Sharon Says So, a couple of other, you know, I feel like they're pretty good at keeping their opinion out of things and kind of giving. Mm-hmm. That's not my thing. Like my stick is not, you're going to know how I feel. Like I'm going to tell you my opinion. I'm going to tell you, but here's, I think the beauty that comes in this is that somehow, and I don't know how, but somehow I'm able to communicate my viewpoints and opinions without ousting the mm-hmm. people that have the opposite opinions than me right. from the conversation.
Yeah. So that's and kind of magical. Like,
really?
Do you,
yeah.
what is it? How do you do that?
Yeah. yeah. I guess, you know, that's, I don't know, to be honest with you, you know, like, cause I don't necessarily see that. I mean, my audience is still pretty close 50-50 left, right. And I am like a blatant Biden voting, like left leaning Christian. And I say it and people mm-hmm. still stick around because they say, I trust you and you make me feel safe. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell it this way. I used to work at a church called North Point Community Church. It's this big mega church in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I was on staff there from 2007 to 2010. And I'll never forget Andy Stanley, who's a pastor there, called me into his office one day. I thought I was in trouble because I mostly was all the time. And he said, Carlos, I need to tell you something. I said, okay. And he said, the reason why you're one of our best worship leaders at the church isn't because you're a good singer. I said, really? He said, no. And he goes, and I've actually never said this to anybody before. And I don't think I've ever seen this before. But when you walk on stage, before you say a word, everybody feels like they're your best friend. Everybody nice. In the room. And whatever that is, he told me, whatever that is what you need to grab a hold of. And that is what you need to pour everything mm-hmm. into, because people feel safe with you. Wow. And you, and so when he said, it's so funny. Andy's the only person that's really ever put it in a way that I can describe it. But I feel like that's just a gift. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just a gift that I've got that, I can say hard things and everybody, cause everybody that follows me, they always say, it's so funny. I ask people all the time. They always say, it's so weird, but when I talk about you, I say my friend, Carlos.
Yeah.
I say my friend, because without knowing it, like that's just, I think how I portray myself is I'm just everybody's friend. Mm-hmm. And I'm a friend that they disagree with sometimes, and I'm a friend that they agree with sometimes, but it's whatever that thing is. I want to really lean into that. And I think that's what I've been leaning into over the last year, that has allowed people to come in, hear maybe a different point of view, and feel like I'm a safe place for them to talk about it.
You create space for people differing opinions. And that's an incredible thing. And what one of my favorite phrases that I've heard you say on your Instagram is, don't stand on issues, walk with people. I've even shared that out to my Instagram mm-hmm. tons of times, because it's such a powerful phrase of a picture of what it looks like to create space for other people, differing opinions, differing backgrounds, etc. Talk about that.
Really quick, I have to share this funny story where I was asked my opinion on a very controversial Christian policy, let's say. And I basically responded with that similar idea. Like, well, I don't think we should make policies about stuff like that. That's more of a conversation. And the guy looked at me and was like, I actually wrote the policy on that for my church. And I was like,
sorry. But
that's amazing.
So how did you come to that phrase? And how have you seen it play out so far?
Yeah. Yeah. So I 100% got that phrase from my friend, Mike Ashcroft.
Okay.
And Mike Ashcroft is a friend of mine. He's a pastor at Port City Church in Wilmington, North Carolina. And he's like on the coast. And it was probably, 7 years ago where I heard him say that. And I don't even know if he's ever said it again. Like, I don't know if that was like a thing or whatever, or if he just said it. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. And, you know, so, I mean, Mike's one of the wisest guys I know. So he says things like this all the time. He's one of those people that you just want to listen to, because he's always saying such wise things. But when he said that, I just said, that's it. Like that has to be how we handle 2020, 2021, the climate that we find ourselves in. If we want to see any form of reconciliation happen, Mm-hmm. It has to be through not building our ideas on opinions, as opposed to building our ideas on actually being in relationship with human beings on a daily basis. So, you know, I tell people all the time, like, don't stand on issues, but walk with people. What does that mean? Well, that means if you are a, and this is more when we were in the, you know, intense seasons of 2020, but like, if you are a Black Lives Matter protester that is like, defund the police, well, I think that's awesome. If that's what you think, but are you in relationship with any law enforcement officers? Mm-hmm. Are you in relationship with anyone that is an LEO or a police officer? So you can talk about defunding the police all you want, but the police, to be honest with you, they're humans, right? So they are human beings wearing uniforms and badges. So like, we can't talk about the police as if it's some institution. We have to talk about the police as if they are humans. Right. So if you are saying defund the police, okay, well then that's fine. But you can't have that opinion until I see you in relationship with the law enforcement officer. If you're a Blue Lives Matter, all Blue Lives Matter, you know, Black Lives Matter is Marxist organization, yada, yada, yada. Well, are you in relationship with a Black person that is selling their soul out to going to every march that feels affected by police brutality, mm-hmm. and by the way policing happens in their community on a daily basis? Are you if you're not in relationship, then you cannot tell me Blue Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter is a Marxist organization. You can't tell me that. You can have that opinion once you're walking with people, right? And mm-hmm. so that's the ticket. That is the game changer. And so, and that's hard. That's really easy for me to say. That's really easy for me, people to nod to and wear that t-shirt. But at the end of the day, that's the hardest thing mm-hmm. in the world to actually do, because what that does is it destroys any sense of us having figured it out. Like, you realize really quickly that you don't, that all of the opinions that you have on issues, like, you don't, you actually don't have it figured out. You've got talking lines, you've got conservative or liberal pundits mm-hmm. that have given you their, whatever their 3 points are, and now you can spout them back on Facebook. Like, you actually don't know. So when you know, and when you get down in the ditches with the people that are walking, mm-hmm. you suddenly just aren't spouting things out anymore. Like, it's mm-hmm. just, it's, you're not looking at what other people are saying and tearing that down. What you're doing instead is you're looking at what you're saying and building that up. So what mm-hmm. happens is you stop saying, yeah, I'm Blue Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter sucks because you stop saying that. Now mm-hmm. you just are talking about why Blue Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. You're no longer talking about just defunding the police. You're talking about, you know, what are ways that you can, that Black Lives Matter can continue to grow without looking at policing as simply an institution, without seeing that. And, you know, we can talk about abortion. You can talk about LGBTQ rights. You can talk about all the things that are issues. Mm-hmm. And as soon as people get off their pedestals and start walking with the humans, ooh, I mean, I think that's where we're going to see healing as a country.
Mm. Amen.
Yes. Amen, right? Yes. And that is one of the greatest obstacles I think humanity has with faith, is when people have taken a place, like, say church and their perspective on church, and they have said, this is where we stand without relationship on the other. This is judgment without mm-hmm. relationship. And when we bridge that gap and begin to love the other and understand the other, we do communicate differently. And that would change the world, to open doors to people to experience a God of love that they thought was a God of absolute damnation and judgment.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah. So like, mm-hmm. amen so to that. And thanks for being you. We have covered so much in this time with you, and we're so stoked. And thanks for joining us in a time of really you and your family trying to build back to life.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. Still being raw in it all too.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Absolutely. No, you guys are, I appreciate you guys. Love what you guys are doing. Love the conversations that you're having. And so, I mean, anytime I can, you know, be a voice for you guys, let me know.
Thanks, Carlos.
Awesome. Rock on.
Thank you.
Hey, before we let you go, where can people find you, and tell us about this thing that I'm holding?
Yeah. So you're holding my book, Enter Wild, that came out in June. And subtitle is Exchange a Mild and Mundane Faith for Life with an Uncontainable God. And what I honestly love about this book is It does tell my story of anxiety and overcoming anxiety, and specifically health anxiety, but it can really help with people in general, with their general anxiety. I was one that, you know, there's a lot of people deconstructing their faith, mm-hmm. You know, out loud. People have always deconstructed their faith. Now, I would say that that's become like a hot word that people use kind of these days. And I think that this book really helps people see somebody that has done that and then put it back together again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And wow. So yeah, I'm excited. If you want to check that out, you can go to enterwild.com. But most of the time I'm just on Instagram, Loswit, LOSWHIT. I'm also on Twitter, but Twitter Carlos is like angry Carlos. Instagram Carlos is like happy Carlos. So like, you know, you want, yeah, make sure you follow me on Instagram before you head over to Twitter so that you like me.
Hey, we would love, one of our immediate follow-ups to this is we will do an Uncommon Good book study on your book and get people together to have awesome. The conversations, because what you give to the world is awesome, and God has made you that man. We mm-hmm. we thank you for sharing yourself with us today.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And thanks for awesome. The thanks. Continued inspiration. Just following you for the last, I don't know, 8 months has been so life-giving during really mm-hmm. challenging times. Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys. Yeah. It really means the world, especially when I can see people that are tapping like face-to-face on my Instagram. Mm-hmm. It means a lot.
So. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, everyone, we hope you enjoyed this time with our friend Carlos. And before we let you go, we hope that you remember, as always, that you are loved.
You are valued.
And you belong, friends.